it removes their defenses because they want to paint. And when they're in that high of like, this is fun, I still feel that there's a duality. Like, you're pressing the button, it releases the tension and the pressure of the can, and there's in your soul, the same thing happens with you. It's like there's a release.
Today, we talk with artist Ronnie Robles about experiencing empowerment through graffiti art, as well as finding strength in vulnerability. We have a raw and brutally honest show for you today. Let's get at it.
Welcome to the Breathe Podcast, where we explore the intersection of faith and creativity. We interview artists from all walks of life to discover how faith plays a role in their art and expression, hoping to encourage you to live a life of creativity and faith. And now, your host, poet, writer, and pastor, Derek Ongoy.
Yup, welcome back to the pod. Thank you so much for joining us once again. Before we get into today's broadcast, if you haven't done so already, please visit our Patreon page and show your support for the Breathe Faith and Creativity podcast. Like most shows, we are listener supported, so I would really appreciate the love. And as for as little as $1 a month, yep, that's right, only $1 a month, you along with the greater community can keep this podcast going. So head on over there as soon as you can. All right, today I'm really excited about our next guest. Ronnie Robles and his art represent one of the four elements of hip hop, which I'm fully grounded in. Aerosol cans, you can say, are his best friends. He uses his art to encourage the youth as well as the greater community at large. I had the amazing privilege of working with him last summer at a youth camp we did together on the campus of Cal State Dominguez Hills, and the camp was geared toward inner city youth. We brought him in on to teach art for the middle school students, and it was great seeing a lot of the kids embrace the medium for good. And his creative expression has also helped him and others find paths toward healings. And he's such a great human being. And brother Ro, welcome to the show, and thanks for making time to be with us today. What's going on, man?
As always, never a dull moment. I mean, there's quiet moments, but there's never a dull moment. So all is well. It's a good day.
Well, that's good, man. Well, hey, how about we just dive into this and see where the conversation leads us, yeah? Why don't you go ahead and just tell us a little bit about yourself? I mean, where are you from? Where you grew up? Just give us a quick bio of who Ronnie Robles is.
Man, that's a lot to say. Really, I've lived lifetimes, and it's a beautiful thing. So, San Gabriel Valley, Baldwin Park, California, born and raised, and then we kind of migrated here and there, but pretty much stayed in that same general area. And now I go.
What is that, 626?
Yes.
626? Used to be 626.
It changed it to 626 in, I think, the right before 2000, I think it was.
Okay.
My buddy's got a tattoo. It was 818. Because 818 was from San Gabriel Valley to like Toluca Lake. You know
what I mean? Long Beach used to be 213. So there you go.
That is the next day he got the letter in the mail that it was 626. But yeah. Fun time, right? Memories, stories you can tell your grandchildren.
Yeah.
Yeah. Grew up in, I guess you can call it the hood. We were all essentially dirt poor. So creativity was kind of like the counterbalance. You know what I mean? Kept us busy. We're playing with random stuff, making stuff to play with. You know what I mean? And of course, like, graffiti was prevalent. So, so I remember being like in first grade, and instead of playing dodgeball, we would have little breakdancing ciphers, a dodgeball court. Like, we'd all sit around, the dodgeball circle.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Stand around the dodgeball circle, and some kid would like beatbox, and like one by one, you know, fools would jump in and battle and do they move and whatnot.
You know what's crazy, though? Like, my kids are in elementary. They don't have dodgeball circles. That's crazy for me to just even comprehend. It's like, what?
That's part of the growing up.
Yeah. Seriously.
Like, one of the prerequisites to get to second grade. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah. So, and then I can't remember what grade. I think it might have been third grade, something like that. One of my buddies broke his arm, and you may or may not remember these, but like the old school markers that had like direct silver, but then when you wrote with them, they had like a little color to it as well.
Yep, of course.
Had that, and he had, you know, in big old letters on his left arm, it said hip hop, and I was like, oh, that's dope. And before you knew it, like, so yeah, we were surrounded by gangs. It kind of, you know, as it is, as many folks were. I don't talk about that much because I don't really feel the need to highlight it. It's kind of like a, I don't know, common kind of thing. Yeah. But that's kind of how, like, I kept from getting beat down for the most part. Yeah. I'd pass and I would just drop, you know, oh, what's your name? All right, cool, I got you. Boom, 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 boom. Here you go. Oh, what's your name over there? Oh, I got you over here. Boom, 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 boom. So, yeah, I used my talent to not get beat up. And that was kind of one of those things. Beyond graffiti, though, just art in general, I started drawing at a very young age, started writing at a very young age. I used to write letters to my family in my coloring books. I would grab a paper coloring book and write a letter to my uncle. Here you go. Boom. Change your life. You know what I mean? Then I would, we can probably get into this more later on in the past this intro, or whatever, but I used to climb a tree in my backyard and I would sit in the tree and I would draw. Yeah, we'll talk about that more later for sure. What else? I went to Otis College in LA. Mm-hmm. Great place to be. I don't know. What else you want to know? I got lost in my own intro.
No, well, let's just, no, that's good. So amongst all that, you know, this podcast is about faith and creativity. Can you speak a little bit about your faith background and how you came to embrace it, in your adulthood and just how you live it out?
Absolutely. Again, that's a whole lot of stuff to compact into one sentence. Like, where do you go? Where do we begin?
Yeah.
So my parents had me at 18.
Okay.
We'll start. And I think my mom went to church, my dad did it. My dad used to drink a lot and drugs a lot, party a lot, all that good stuff. My aunt would take us to pick up my cousins and I and take us to church every Sunday. Hmm. My parents on my mother's side were the only, like, full Mexican side, whatever you want, if you want to call it. All of my cousins are other races than I am. So imagine a you know, an older Mexican woman picking up a kid full of, like, random kids of different colors. Yeah. Like, affluent white trash, white, black, Mexican, and other shades of very, yeah. Very, all roll into a church in Monrovia, and we go to church every weekend. And individually, we all kind of found God. Fast forward to my parents getting saved. I saw my dad fully transformed from whatever your worst case scenario is to a youth pastor, youth minister.
Wow.
And then because we were raised to work, him and his buddy, they would go and build stuff at the church. You know, something we needed fixing, we were there. They would do various projects at the church. And one of his buddies drew, what did he draw? It was like Woodstock from the Snoopy's and Peanuts Gallery, whatever. And he drew it like a bicycle built for like six. And each Woodstock had a different kind of character, a different kind of outfit. And he threw it down. I picked it up. I'm like, oh, I can do that. And so I drew it real quick, you know, hey, look at this. And then once they realized I had some talent, they put me on the ladder and told me to paint the wall. So it was very much, yeah, they just put you to work. They gave you something to do and something to aspire to. They hooked me up with mentors. One was a Caucasian man who painted very well and drew very well and did graphic design very well. My other mentor was a former LA gang member with tattoos. So he, like, yeah, got the best of both worlds, so to speak.
Yeah.
We transformed a concert theater in Pomona into a church. So imagine that, you know, we did that. And then each of those rooms needed mirrors. Each of the backstage rooms became Sunday school rooms. Each room got changed into a theme. So whatever the theme was, we painted that wall. Pick up a brush, let's go, put you to work. We're going to use your gift. And then the main room became like this huge, I can't even describe it, but it was great. Oh, so faith and talent. As any young kid in church, I used to get bored in church a lot and grow in church. And being that my mother was a youth minister, she wasn't pleased. So I remember asking, like, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, I'm taking notes, you know, that's what I could think of. And she was like, okay, well, your notes better match mine, and you're going to be in trouble after church. And I was like, dang it. So I got in trouble after church for about a month.
So she would test you?
Oh, yeah, no. Like, I was just drawing, like, Disney characters. You know, I was just drawing whatever came to mind. But when she asked me, like, what are you doing? I was like, oh, I'm taking notes. Like, it was like, okay. But she's also an educator. So she was like, okay, well, your notes better match my notes.
Yeah.
Or else you. So for a week or two, a month or two, I was punished weekly for not because I no, well, not necessarily for drawing in church, but for lying about it. Because right. like I was like, very, very early on, my parents were like, honesty over everything. Like, do not lie. Tell the truth. Like, honesty over, like, even if it's horrible truth, tell the truth.
Yeah.
Because it was more because I was lying about what I did in church. If I just said, I'm just drawing, you know, I don't know, whatever it was, you know, goofy, it probably wouldn't have been a thing. But because I lied about it, that was like the key point. And not paying attention, of course.
Yeah.
So, like I said, after about a month later, you know, same scenario. I'm sitting there, I'm drawing in church, and she looked over. She's like, look, like, man, I can't keep beating you. Like, yo, whatever the pastor says, draw that. And I was like, really? She's like, yeah. I was like, oh, okay. So he talked about whatever, be it the woman at the well. Drew that real quick, you know, draw the well, draw the, like, pull out the different words he used to say and draw that. The next week she did, she taught a story where she, of the, what is it, Legion, and the guy and the pigs that jumped and the pigs up off the cliff.
Yeah.
She tells that story in her Sunday school classes. She's teaching teenagers. I'm like, maybe six, you know, I'm a young guy. And so as she's teaching these teenagers this story about the man with the demons who got to be cast out, and they go into the pigs, and the pigs jump off the cliff. She's telling the story, and I had a big old newsprint pad, and I'm drawing that with a Sharpie marker, kind of to tell the story. And I didn't think much of it now, then back then, but now it's like it's pretty much what I get to do now, is where I do that live in front of thousands. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's a trip, because like I said, it was just a matter of like, she could have been like, no, took the marker away, you know, don't bring drawing supplies to church, don't touch a pen until you get home, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Turned it around and said, okay, if you're going to do it, like, do this for the purpose you were given. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of how it all started for the most part. Yeah.
So let's go back to this tree. You mentioned this tree early on. What's up with that?
Well, let's go back to exposing all my details. yeah, like I said, I could have easily been aborted, and I wasn't. Thank the Lord for that. And they never put it in my face, but like when we were struggling, it was like, hey, this is what happened. My bad. And my mom were very, very open. Like, hey, like, we messed up, or, you know, we're working, yeah, we're making what we can. So, I loved that, actually. I loved the honesty of that. So, being that they were 18, 19 and, you know, into their 20s when they had me, our house was the party house. Imagine, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
pick a 17, 18 year old right now and give them a house. See what happens.
Yeah.
Our house was the party house. And I had a lot of questions about God at a very young age. I was a very inquisitive child. And I remember asking my mom, like, hey, like, what is, like, where's God at? Like, he's here, where is he at? You know, and you need to go to church. Like I said, I went to this old church in Monrovia. A bunch of senior citizens, and they're like, oh, God looks from above. I'm like, okay, God looks from above. And the way they explained it to me was like, it's gonna take us way back, but Dukes of Hazzard toys, G.I. Joe, was like the same way you control your car and your G.I. Joe, and your G.I. Joe figure from above, God controls us, he sees from above and he controls things. I was like, oh, cool. So that was my, you know, my little kid understanding of what God, how he saw, how he heard, and how he moved things around, and he controls everything. He's omniscient, all knowing, all of that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my earliest memories was a overweight white man with a huge belly that was showing, and he's sitting there on my couch, passed out. There's cocaine and a number of other types of substances on our coffee table. Mm-hmm. So follow me now. So there's a man, there's a table, then there's me sitting in front of the table facing the TV with a bowl of mac and cheese, drinking some Kool-Aid and a piece of paper and a pencil, watching cartoons.
Hmm.
So, and I remember watching cartoons as like my escape, but also like at the end of the cartoons, it was like the names of who drew it, who wrote it, who produced it, all of that. And I was like, oh, I want to be that guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So whenever it got crazy, let me back up. I'm sorry. So that was like my escape. I would just draw stuff. I would just kind of get into that, like get into anything I could find with like any kind of like art or cartoon character or something, anything to draw, whatever. That became like a escape, so to speak.
Yeah.
Art was my escape. I was abused at Thanksgiving by a couple of family members. Mm-hmm. And most of my family is a lot taller than I am. I'm the runt of the litter. Mm-hmm. My younger brother is 6'2", and he's 4 years younger than I am, like wow. 5. So being the runt of the litter, being the one that was smart and inquisitive and like too smart for his own good, like it was like that Joseph complex where like they loved you, but they hated you kind of thing. And there's a whole bunch of other stories that I'm not going to get into right now about like how I was singled out at a very young age to like, hey, you're going to make it for us. Like you're the one, you're going to make it for all of my grandfather. I was like, hey, you're the one that's going to make it for all of us. And I was like, okay.
Talk about pressure, right?
No, I was with it. I mean,
okay.
I was kind of with it and I enjoyed it. Just as I'm not trying to compare myself to the dude, but just as Joseph's brothers weren't too thrilled about that. I had some older cousins that weren't too thrilled about that. So there was a lot of above the norm persecution. Yeah. And it all even down to like I said, a family member and a cousin, at Thanksgiving. Straight up tricking me into some things that I would never do. And even then it didn't feel, what's the word? Yeah. I was like, something don't feel right. And, every person knows that. So, you know, it's Thanksgiving. Hey, time to come eat. And the two that were with me said, and I heard that noise and I was like, oh, they got me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So now I'm angry. Everyone goes in, kind of eat, wash your hands, whatever. Let's all sit down. It's time for Thanksgiving. We're about to think, you know, none of them really serve Jesus for real, but we're going to thank Jesus for this year.
Right.
And I come in the house like, hey, this just happened. Go sit down. Hey, this just happened. Go sit down. Trying to eat, wash your hands, go sit down, be quiet. I'm like, hey, this just happened. And so kind of like the Kevin Home Alone thing, like no one believed me because I was little.
Yeah.
So my mind was like, okay, they can't hear me. You know what I'm saying? I'm too little. God can't hear me. But if he sees from heaven, he can see these writings. So I started writing things down that were just truth. Like this is the truth that happened this day. This is the truth that happened this day. Like I said, the letters that I wrote to my uncles or whatnot. I would go up in the tree so God can see me from heaven, and I would draw and I would write and I would like, it was like my own little prayer time, but not instead of like talking about it, I would draw about it. I would write about it. All of that. Wow. So that was like all the other stories are cool and fun to share. But in reality, like those moments, like I said, I would climb the wall, climb the tree. And it wasn't even like a tree house. It was just like leaves and a board. And I would sit in the tree and I would just draw for hours on end and write on hours on end. My mom told me about David and Psalms and how like, you know, like Psalms are all these great prolific things, but and personal things. But she said David was just kind of hanging out with the sheep and writing. So that was kind of like a similar, that alone time. Yeah, I would just be up there for hours drawing and writing and kind of just getting things out. So I hope that answers the question.
Man, thank you for sharing that part of your life. I know that, you know, revisiting some of this stuff. I mean, I can even just think about some things in my life that are painful and such. But man, thank you for your transparency and for sharing that part. Truly, truly grateful for you on that end. But speaking of which, so, you know, you described toward the end how art somewhat became your, I guess, platform for healing, right? It was a way that you can communicate. It was the way that you spoke to God. It was the way that you, you know, just process some of the things that you were going through. I guess the next question kind of springboards from that. Think about your life now. How is art therapeutic for you? And maybe how have you seen your art specifically, or maybe you lead workshops, or maybe you lead community groups, and how has your art helped to heal other people, or other people to experience healing through your art?
There's so many examples. I'm gonna try and make it brief. No promises. I'll start at the end, and I'll go back to the beginning. So at the end, reason that it's, there's countless people that continue to come up to me any given Sunday, any given day of the week, and remind me that what I'm doing touches them. Because you know it when you're doing it, but you don't know it. That's what keeps me going. That's why I do it. I don't necessarily do it for the money or for the, you know, acclaim or whatever. It's always been for the people.
Yeah.
So let's back up again. I lost the ability to speak complete sentences right around my sophomore year of college.
Okay.
Was in two different back-to-back car accidents. Car accidents. that's funny. I was in two different car accidents in a very short amount of time. Actually, three. But one was where it destroyed my car. And the second, it was a miracle because I walked out unscathed. Mm. And the other was a rear-end collision where I had a head injury. And I had these spasms on the side of my head, so to speak. And I would, I get these headaches, and the headaches were excruciating, and I couldn't think straight. I'd be in the middle of a sentence of a complete derail, and there was no way to get back to where I was. Like, I would just completely blank out due to these headaches. I once described it in a poem as like those Calgon commercials.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The 2012 version of that is like, I guess like a Mac screen with all the windows open and they're all playing videos. So the thing you wanted to think about, the thing you didn't want to think about, and everything else you had to do was all at the same time. And I just couldn't handle it. It was just so much, it was a lot going on. So I had, I guess what you'd call teenage angst in my 20s. Yeah. Cause I just couldn't get what was inside out. So I went back to that same form of like, I got to get this out somehow. So I would just sit with sketchbooks and journals and come home from class and from college every day and just sit down and write and draw and kind of just like, even if it was just scribbling, just get whatever was inside out one way or another. So whether that be writing stuff down or typing stuff out, I didn't know how to type, but I would kind of like play the keyboard like a piano. Mm-hmm. And I didn't play piano either, but like word by word, sentence by sentence, I would write out these poems to get whatever was inside out. Like, so a lot of spoken word was birthed out of that. Because before that, I was a rapper. I said, you'd be an MC, but back then you couldn't be an MC and stutter, and you couldn't be an MC with this. Nowadays, you can just, you know, make noises on a track and get money. But back then you had to have, you know, you had to be able to at least say this stuff. So I could write the stuff, but I couldn't say it. So I started ghostwriting for people. But I kind of slowed down on the speaking part. Mm-hmm. But a lot of that prayer time helped me complete sentences again. Got me speaking again, got me healed again, so to speak. That was my healing.
Wow.
I started teaching as a sub in South Almani, which is we're kind of that same area that I grew up in. And I chose that area specifically because it was like right next door to the area I grew up in. I had a student die on a Friday. School itself was a continuation school for fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth graders, which is great, which was mind-boggling to me at the time.
Because
I've only known the high school people, you know, or those that got kicked out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then the school, and it's a continuation for fifth and sixth, seventh, and eighth. Like, wow. So every time I went down, there was like always something going on. But one day I walked in and I was like, hey, why is everybody here? There's so many people from the district and from the city and, you know, just way too many people on campus for it to be normal. And they're like, yeah, you know, I'm not gonna say her name, but you know, so-and-so died on Friday. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, no, like, yeah, she passed on. And I was like, wow. So that gave me like a ton of bricks. And the teacher, that Friday, this is Monday morning. So on Friday, she was the last person that tried to resuscitate her. She was the one that kind of brought her to life until the ambulance got there. So she took that super hard, you know? And so she requested 2 weeks off and they brought me in. And I didn't see the value at the time. But so you have school counselors, like college district, who's, and people from the city in this room with the children trying to help them cope, but also trying to help them like, they're going over the story. They're going over what happened on Friday because they were all there. It wasn't like a private thing. Imagine Friday afternoon, 2 o'clock, almost end of the day. Everyone's kind of, you know, doing their normal thing. And then the kid falls down out of her chair and doesn't get up. So they brought in the grief counselors, the trauma counselors, all of that. And I come in the room and they say, hey, you know what? Just sit down in the corner. I'm like, okay, I'm here to teach, but I'll sit down, no problem. So I sit down and they're trying to connect with the kids and it's not working at all. And as they're talking, I just grabbed a piece of paper and I started cutting out stars and hearts and swirls and different little things. And little by little, the students who knew me already were kind of coming a little closer. I'm like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm going to make a card for the family. Okay. And so one by one, they come out of their seats and they're surrounding me. Who's that guy again? Who is this? okay. After a while, like, everyone is surrounding me, you know, quote unquote, just the sub, and we're making cards for the family. So mind you, this is like the work, one of the, you know, one of the armpits of LA, you know what I'm saying? But when one of the armpits of LA, no disrespect, cause I love everyone there, but you know, when it's perceived as that, and you, so now you got, we're in one of the worst schools for the ones that got kicked out of the school in the armpit of LA. So the news vans are coming, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. News vans are coming. And they're coming for the story because this is like the epitome of the stereotype working. Like you're saying, so they're coming for that. And thank the Lord, by the time they showed up, we had a mural on the wall on a piece of paper, on a big piece, big old sheet of butcher paper. Uh-huh. Aim, and then each kid came and they put their handprint on the mural. And then they, as their handprint dried, they got a marker and they wrote a message to her and the family.
Wow.
So when they showed up for, you know, oh, show us the, you know, the drama. They saw the love. They saw kids at peace. They saw kids happy already. You know what I mean? So it was like, that was part of the healing process as it was. So I remember the cameras were now recording those handprints. You know, saying rather than recording kids crying, right, I'm recording kids processing it correctly. You know, all that, all the stuff. You know what I mean? Got to see that. And then for the next 2 weeks, I was their teacher, and actually it ended up being 2 months, if not more. Because I actually helped them through the process of transitioning out. We covered their desk with butcher paper every day. I gave them a stack of regular paper, a stack of line paper, and just random pencils and markers that I had from my own arsenal. And yeah, we did our lessons, but we had like conversations each day. We had like in-depth feeling conversations each day. And these are the ones that weren't the most willing to participate. Mm-hmm. So I have, you know, I let them draw and paint and scribble and do watercolor and whatever else on their desk each day, little by little. Like, you know, the most gangsterific kid in my class was like a beautiful painter. I'm like, dude, you paint beautifully. He's like, little bit, you know what I'm saying? like you're really good. Like, hold on, no, like you're really good. Like, I'm not just saying it because to, you know, boost your morale or whatever. I'm like, no, like you're actually really, really good. You know, so you kind of like, thank you, but didn't really, you know, didn't want it to be a big thing.
Yeah.
I got with the principal and some of the staff, and I said, hey, I'll donate my stuff. You donate your stuff. And they brought in paint. They brought in from their garages. They brought in boards from Home Depot. We got some paint donated from Home Depot. And one by one or two by two, we brought them out and let them paint on these square boards. Each one painted a painting of their own, you know, their own work of art. Whatever they wanted to paint, they could paint. And, you know, we got them here and there.
Yeah.
So just the regular, you know, stereotypical, you know, neighborhood graffiti or anything gang related and that kind of stuff. It was like actual works of art from their own soul. Yeah. So that in itself was healing. Fast forward to graduation. Now their graduation, I'm gonna hurt some feelings, but oh well. It was embarrassing for everybody. Hmm. You know what I'm saying? It was so this campus is like a small addendum sort of thing at addition to an elementary school. So imagine being a junior high, having to go over to the elementary cafeteria for your quote unquote graduation. Oh. Where you have to get off work. Everyone there is embarrassed. Everyone's embarrassed. Like, why are we here? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's things. And so we came in as parents are coming in, you see all this artwork on the walls and on these tables. And it's, you know, it's a cool little thing. And the parents knew I was there. They knew what happened. I actually even spoke at the funeral, which was God himself. Wow. Cause yeah, I still kind of marvel at that. Use every gift, right? So yeah. They come in for this, everyone's coming in on their phones, rushed in from work. Cause they get on the lunch break, they get this quick little commencement ceremony going. And, you know, they look at the artwork and they kind of, you know, they're there and the principal says whatever she has to say and they do the whole thing. And then I come up to speak and say, hey, by the way, you know, I know you guys know, refer to me. I'm the artist that came in to help with you, you know, that help your children. I've been teaching them for the past couple of months. The work behind you is not mine. It's your children's. Wow. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The way one of them explained it was like, yeah, I did some, he, like, we've done some horrible things to get here, but we're also capable of this. And so I had each child walk their parent or guardian, whoever came for them, to the piece of artwork so they can see it and touch it in their hands and take it home. And it was, yeah, man, it's a beautiful moment, and I won't forget it for a very long time. And so it's like something so simple changed the outlook of how their parents saw them, which was most important for me. You know what I mean?
No, yeah, that's good. It reminds me, and maybe you can speak a little bit into it, but it reminds me of an activity right at the top of the show. I had mentioned that we had worked together for this summer camp at Cal State Dominguez, and
yeah,
you had these kids toward the last part of the summer. You had these kids spray paint negative words or phrases onto this canvas. And these phrases or words that the students, they represented words that the students heard growing up and had a negative influence on their lives. And after a moment of reflection, you had them go back and spray paint positive words over the negative ones. And I thought it was a beautiful moment of reflection, expression, and healing. And I'm assuming that wasn't your first time doing that activity. And the one that you just described with the continuation school sounds very similar. Can you talk about the process of you coming up with that idea and maybe share a couple stories of how you were able to encourage people through that particular activity?
I believe it might've been with Triple Threat Mentoring. They, do a lot of work in Chicago, and they started a new branch out in Santa Ana a couple of years ago, and they wanted to bring in, like, you know, bring in graffiti. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool, but like, is that gonna help them for real?
Yeah.
You know, and so I didn't want to be, no disrespect to all my graffiti brothers, like the stereotype.
Yeah.
I mean, I was always like, I don't want to just feed into the stereotype, because that's cool, but then what did we, how we serve them? Did we serve them well? Or did we serve them more with the stuff that they're expected to do?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because when I got my art scholarship, like, it was because I could draw. I was good. You know, it wasn't because, like, oh, let's, you know, take this kid from the inner city and then, you know, give him a shot. Like, no. So I remember getting to the Metrolink, to the subway, to the RTD or MTA. flashbacks, right?
Yeah.
Walking through MacArthur Park. Leave, you know, I've left the hood, right, so to speak. I've got, you know, my dad worked just to get us out and all to call this good stuff. Metrolink, subway, MTA, walking across MacArthur Park, and first thing I see is a brother looks just like me. Where you from, man? I'm like, really? You know what I'm saying? I've been up since 6 traveling hours to get here.
Yeah.
And is where I'm, oh, man. So get past them dudes, get up the stairs, first day of class, and they're like, oh, you do graffiti, huh? And I was like, really? Like, that's what I work for. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, hometown art legend, you know, and I get here and, oh, you do graffiti, right? And I was like, yeah, but because it's fun. But not, you know what I'm saying? I do, there's so much more to me than just this one form of art.
Yeah.
And I noticed whenever I would give kids markers and spray cans, because I've been doing that for years. Check out that last track on the Crimson Court album. I would give people art supplies all my life, because that's what people gave to me, you know, like, here, but people put it in my hand, I put it in others' hands, and I want to see them grow. So whenever I would do that, my cousins included, you know, you'd get the local hood, you'd get the local letters, the local, whatever side you was on, whatever the thing was, you would see that, you know what I mean? And, I remember one of our mentors seeing my cousin, you know, he wrote something, whatever. And he was like, yeah, but what about you? This is where I'm from, but what about you? But this is where I'm keeping it real. I'm like, but what do you got to say though? Someone else told you this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Your parents, but only because they couldn't afford to go somewhere else. Like, what about you? You know? So, every single time I would, you know, whatever city it was, I'd give someone a spray can, in these circles. Even the kids in the classroom, the one that we, not your classroom, but my classroom,
yeah.
That it is, the local gang symbol, the local gang colors, like all that was part of the deal. I'm like, okay, hold on. Okay, cough all that stuff up. Not a problem. I'm not going to trip. I'm not going to show the teacher. I'm not going to report you. Like, cough it all up. Okay, cool. You done? Tell me about what's in your soul. You're saying what's you, like, you've been fed all this stuff for so long. Like, this is who you are. This is what we're about. This is, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In order to be like some of my students, their father's great accomplishment was that he was still there and didn't die. I'm like, that's cool. Shout out to him being alive, but like, it needs to be more.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yourself, like, well, my dad's the highest gangster in the area. Cool, he got a nice truck. That's what's up. But like, you know what I'm saying? Like, is that really all you want to do with your life? Not if that, if it is, I can't knock it. I can't knock your hustle. But like, once I say it often, once you get past that freeway, no one cares. Like, you know what I'm saying? Get past the 605, man. You know what I'm saying? just get past the freeway, and it's a whole new world. Like it's a, you know, like once you get outside the microcosm, like it's a whole new world, and no one cares about everything we care. Everything we care about, no one cares. Yeah. Like if I can get you outside that box, so to speak, then it's a whole new world. And as much as okay, inside the microcosm, it means a lot. You know what I'm saying? And I understand this roots of the culture, and that it means a lot. But outside, none of those things carry weight. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But inside you, like, you know what I'm saying? The genuine you, the truthful you, the honest you, the stuff you have to share with the world, that's currency. That matters. That carries weight. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, okay, whatever you got to do, here's 20 pages. Get all the junk out. Okay, cool. Now, like, almost like when you, summertime, when you get the water hose and you got to let the hot come out first.
Yep.
Oh, get all that hot out till you get the fresh spring. Now, from that fresh spring, be free to do whatever you want to do. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so good.
Yeah, and then that's where the beautiful stuff starts coming out. And so I did that with some students in Santa Ana with Triple Threat a couple of different times. And it just kind of came to me one day. I was like, what have they called you? You know, because we carry, like, I was teased. Who else wasn't teased? Who else was teased as a child? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They've called you your whole life and you carry this weight. Like, this is what I am. This is what I've been. Da, da, da. Okay, what have they called you? You know, write that down. And I had, I think even with your students as well, we had them turn around. So, like, it was a very private moment, like, where they had, because normally when you're doing graffiti, whatever else, like, it's middle of the night, 4 a.m, you're writing on walls. Like, no one's really there watching you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that was part of the element, like, okay, look, and I guess this, what was cool about, you know, the graffiti days or whatever, like, no one saw you doing it. It was a private time, and you got to broadcast whatever you wanted to write. That was your moment to write on the wall, and they're going to see it tomorrow morning. You know what I'm saying? Someone's going to see it tomorrow morning. Whatever you chose to write, you know, for whatever reason you wanted to write. So you can write a message, or you can write what someone told you to write, or you can write something to get yourself, your name known. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So taking that element, I was like, okay, if you're going to write something worth repeating, write something worth reading. So gave them that, but then also, like I said, okay, you can tell that to someone that's 12 or 13 or 14, they may not fully get it. So I was like, okay, let's boil that down a little bit more. Okay. What have they called you? You know what I'm saying? A lot of my frustrations from age 10 to now was like, I'm not that, I'm this, yeah. I'm not that. Even while you're trying to figure yourself out, you don't want to be like, you know, you don't want to be boxed in, so to speak. So I was like, okay, well, what have they called you? And then I gave them a chance to either write over their word, like, so what are you really? You know, change colors, get another color, get a brighter color. What are you for real? Write that on the thing. And then I've done it another time where it was rather than write over their word, because no one knew which word it was written. And rather than putting them in a spot where they kind of like bust themselves, like, I wrote this, you know, I would say, go find someone else's word and write either the opposite or write an affirming word over it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's been variations of that over the years, and each time it's pretty beautiful and amazing to see what people are calling kids these days, for one.
Yeah.
And two, as much as we don't get to see the humanity in our children as much, or our younger generations as much, like, they really do back each other up for real, for real. It's in them. It's, you know what I'm saying? Whether they received it as children or not, whether they received it in their training or not, it's in them to care for one another. Not just like write a pass, like, here, you get a pass, you're cool. But like, oh, wow, like, I feel that same way too. You mentioned the whole, what's the word? Like the downtime where we looked at the words, I let them look at it, and people realized some of the words that other people wrote were their words as well.
Yeah.
There was an instant, like, people that didn't get along instantly got along, and right. they felt, which is part of why I love poetry, is like, you share these private moments out on stage, and there's like strength and vulnerability, you know, as you share what you thought only you were going through. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I wanted to incorporate that kind of that same vulnerability in a safe space under the guise of graffiti, because, you know, there is definitely a high when you press the button, like, there's a release and there's an audible sound and it feels good. And, mm-hmm. You know, you were there. The kids will paint all day if you let them. So it's kind of a trick, but not a trick. It's a good trick.
Yeah. No, yeah.
It removes their defenses because they want to paint. And when they're in that high of like, this is fun, this is, I still feel that there's a duality. Like you're pressing the button, it releases the tension and the pressure of the can. And as and there's a, in your soul, the same thing happens with you. It's like there's a release, you know? Yeah. Artists, poets, comedians, we tell the truth and it gives us less stress. And then people laugh like jokes that are, the comedians say, because nine times out of ten they're funny, or they're saying things that are actually true that no one has the guts to say. And poets do it, and artists do it as well. We share these honest moments. If we're a great artist, we're, you know, some of my favorite artists, whether they're singers or poets or dancers, or whatever, they're honest. Like they're sharing the most pure truth, you know, and you can't refute it. So you just marvel at the truth that they shared. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's in a long way of speaking, that's kind of how I wanted to model that particular exercise. And yeah.
No, that's so good, man. And I just appreciate that. I mean, one, again, this whole talk, this whole interview has been nothing but complete honesty from you. And I just appreciate that about you and really what you do in the community. And I think we can go on and on and on and have this. I mean, I think we can just go on and break up this interview in like three parts, four parts. Just I think you got a lot of wisdom and a lot of experience to share. But yeah, I just want to, you know, kind of wrap things up as we kind of wind things down in this interview. Is there, I don't know, maybe another word of advice that you perhaps would like to share with someone out there, maybe a budding artist, maybe a struggling Christian, whatever last words you might have that you'd like to share with someone out there listening, by way of encouragement or inspiration, any last minute words or thoughts of advice?
Man. So I'm torn between two, and I'll just do one. You're not crazy.
Yeah.
If you are, like, part of this, art is very, very therapeutic. That was kind of what we touched on. Art is very therapeutic. And I believe it's definitely from God for us to express without words, without speaking necessarily. You know, when you're writing it down, you're not actually speaking. You're coming from the soul. So please do that. People that run into me after every show, and I paint all over the world now. And it's like, oh, man, I used to draw too. I used to paint too. And I'm like, so why did you stop? Oh, I got busy. I got kids. I got jobs. I got college. I got school. I got this. I got that. And I'm like, yeah, but like you ate dinner, right? Yeah. And you washed, you know, you brushed your teeth this morning. Yeah. You took a shower. Yeah. So you made time for these other things that are beneficial to you. Mm-hmm. But you still don't see the same thing as part of an integral part of your being. And like, nah, you know, it, I want to say post 9/11, really, a lot of artists like myself struggled with like, what am I doing? You know what I'm saying? The value in this, like, I'm not building bombs, I'm not building planes, I'm not protecting the government. You know what I'm saying? I'm not doing something that's like this integral thing of society. And no, we are, you know what I mean? We've been created to, yeah, we've been created to worship. Worship is like a full body response to God's goodness, a full body response to whatever he did that particular day. Yeah. So some people sing, some people dance, some people jump around, some people build things. You know what I'm saying? There's so many ways to react to his goodness. Yeah. So we get so caught up in no disrespect to the ministry side. You know what I'm saying? Because like I said, I'm in ministry as well. You know what I'm saying? There's so many things to do and get done by a certain amount of time. And trust me, the calendar is crazy. But never to get lost in that Martha and Mary thing. Like, yes, do the work. And yes, make sure things are handled. But sit with me.
Yeah, that's good.
Breathe with me. Just be like, you know what I'm saying? You have to have both. And you have to have a balance. So I've recommended people, there was a time, I have an iPad now, but before the iPad, I used to put my sketchbook under my pillow. So, or by my, what is it? My, bedside table, whatever you want to call it. So that no matter what happened with my day, before I hit that pillow, I'm going to at least get the paper and scribble. It don't have to be words. It can be swear, whatever I'm saying, like a physical, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, that's like, good.
This was today, you know, there's certain days I page, and a couple of them, threw it on the floor. That was my day. Like, it's necessarily, but it has to be a nonverbal conversation between you and the father. When things got really, really hectic and I couldn't sleep from insomnia, I would get that same paper and I wrote down whatever I needed to do for the day or whatever I was worried about. Write it down, 1 through 35. Okay, wrote it all down? Yeah, go to sleep. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it's a visual, like, prayer thing. Okay, cool. God sees it all. He sees from heaven. He sees what you're writing. Rest. You've done all you can do. You've done all you can do now, stand or rest or sleep. But make time for that. Set up a small little table in the corner of your room, whatever space you have, with art supplies ready to go, be it from the 99-cent store, like, whatever you have, like, make time for that, because it's the equivalent of not eating well, yeah. You know, not taking time for that. So it's like the same way you would sit and drink water, or sit and pick a thing. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, hey, I think to that end, folks out there, just cultivate what that is that you have a passion for. Don't sit on it. Don't rest on it. Hey, Ro, really quickly, what we've been doing at the end of every single show, we've been doing lightning rounds, where I just blurt out two choices and you just respond with your quick answer. Can we do that?
Sure.
All right, here we go. Blue or yellow?
I'm going to say yellow.
Crayon or chalk?
Man, we're going to fight. we're doing chalk today.
Oil or acrylic?
Acrylic. Oil smells.
Aerosol or paintbrush?
Yeah, we're going to fight. I can't. Those are like all these. I'm still going to paintbrush.
405 or 605?
MetroLink. No, 605.
CDs or vinyl?
Vinyl.
80s rap or 90s rap?
Early 90s rap.
Books or tablet?
Man. Sketchbook and a tablet.
Walls or freeway signs?
Walls.
Linoleum or concrete?
Linoleum.
All right, there you go, guys. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Lightning Round with Ronnie Robles. Thank you so much for playing, Ro. Really quickly, how can we find you on social media?
Where you at, Ro? Is on Instagram. You can spell it both ways. Originally, it was W-H-E-R-E-U-A-T-R-O. I thought it was genius, thought people couldn't spell it. So I was Where You At, Ro, W-H-E-R-E-Y-O-U-A-T-R-O. And that's just my paintings. So one is like my daily life and my life on the go, cheeseburgers and whatnot. And then when it just the artwork. So that's how you can find me right now. LoveSendProject.com is kind of a web store type situation where I sell art and prints and that kind of stuff. And catch me in the streets.
Well, cool. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Ronnie Robles, make sure you check him out on social media. All the information will be in the show notes as well. And please make sure you rate and review this podcast. And once again, go on to the Patreon page and support the show so we can keep it rolling. Until next time, be the light, extend your hand in love, and make peace with someone this coming week. Stay blessed, and we'll catch you next time. Peace.